and welcome to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. On the show this week, Mossy and I sit down with Scotland stars Lisa Thompson and Chloe Rowley. Plus, we reflect on the first weekend of Fosrock Super 6. And we look back at a successful weekend for both Edinburgh and Glasgow Warriors. So Mossy, here we are. We're back home. We're back at BT Murray for a couple of weeks on the road, recording the podcast down in Glasgow. A bit of a skeleton squad this week, no Big Al.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, because we've been at Scotland due to kind of working around Al's diary, but even working around his diary, we kind of get him in this week. He's such a busy man, so we'll be without him, but we'll, if anything comes up, we can give him a call, I suppose.
Super 6 last weekend, it finally launched, the Fosrock Super 6, three big games. I was at Bodymuir Friday night, I don't think you were there, Mossy, but you
saw... No, it was the Edinburgh game Friday night.
It was a great opening night at Meggleland between Bodymuir Bears and Stirling County. Not the result that Bodymuir wanted, but I think just even going by the first game, Mossy, the intensity was higher, the energy efforts were higher, the effort was greater. It was a great opening game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the great opening weekend, really. I think what was noticeable was the kind of feeling of an event around. I was at the Ayrshire Bulls Heritage one on Sunday, and the feeling around that, the kind of activation on and off the field. But in terms of a rugby perspective, you just had to look and see, you actually saw a physical change in a lot of the body shapes of the players and the intensity of the games. I wasn't at the Bodymuir Bears game. I was here on Friday night. I didn't make it down to Southern Knights against Watsonians, but it was obviously just a point between them as well. Three close games, and we'll dig into it a little bit. But I think the overriding thing was it did seem of high intensity. There was a genuine excitement around it. There was a genuine kind of a lot of inquiries around it, really, to see what it was going to be like. And you could tell that the teams have had a lot of time to prepare. The one thing I would say is, having seen bits and pieces of the first two games and obviously being at the third game live, some of the mistakes were probably a result of being the first game of the season, and I think we quite forget that we're almost in the middle of November and we're talking about the first game of the season. But it's just the way the structure's fallen this year. Yeah, the players have played, you know, one or two warm-up games and kind of warm-up fixtures against Newcastle and against each other, but there was key moments, and certainly the game that I was at, that the mistakes, some of the mistakes will be ironed out through just more game time. But the set pieces were strong. I thought certainly the defences were strong, and the defences should be strong. If you've got, I said this in commentary on Sunday, if you've got brave, fit, committed individuals, defence is usually easier than attack to get right. If you've got more time together, you stick to the system, you know your system, you don't deviate from the system, and there's a discipline to stick to it. Whereas an attack, you have to be more creative and you have to be a bit more instinctive. So I thought the defences really were pretty good over the three games. And the challenge for the teams is to improve their attack. The defences will get better, more time together, fitter, stronger, and, you know, more clarity around the system. So the challenge for the six teams is to acknowledge that and say, let's really work on the attack and see how I suppose better that attack can be and how well it could be executed.
When you look at all three games and the results, Mossy, it was three away wins, and people have been talking about perhaps that already you can see this league being much more competitive. Does that mean anything to you, the fact that the closer games are away wins?
I think when you condense the number of players from effectively 10 teams to 6 and add some and take some away, and you know, everyone's playing the standard rugby that they want to or they aspire to or that best suits them, you've condensed the numbers, so you are naturally going to get a more competitive product. I would say that maybe some of the bigger scores we've seen in the last two or three years have probably been between teams first and second, third in the league, or 7th, 8th or 9th, 10th in the league, so there is a bigger discrepancy. You're not going to get that with six teams, really. Three away wins is unusual. Maybe something in that, in terms of the pressure on the home side, the preparation for it, a bit of the free reign, really, if you are playing away from home. But I would say that kind of knee-jerk reactions as to form and results and form teams after one weekend is a dangerous thing. You know, there were a few mistakes, there's a lot of positives. But yeah, I think over the course of the first, you know, five or six rounds, we'll get a better idea. I think the coaches all said prior to the week one that from a 35-man squad, it's difficult to choose your starting 15 for the first game. Obviously, you've got you know, a little bit of form to go by in terms of warm-up games and fixtures, but they all said it's very difficult to choose the starting 15 for the first game, but those will all the players should get opportunities over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So we will see that competitive element remain, and I think that's exactly what the Fosbroke Super Six has been designed to do.
So you were down at Mill Bray for our live coverage of Fosbroke Super Six. How was it for you? Who stood out for you in that game?
I thought Heriots were really good in terms of they didn't get off to the best start. Ayr won the dominant in the first scrum, the first line out, won a penalty, kicked it, went 3-0 ahead, and then Heriots played what's their traditional game, their wide game. Didn't make a huge amount of ground or inroads, but actually set the platform really well for a well balanced attack. So I thought Heriots were excellent, and then they just took total and utter control up front. Two or three big moments in the first half came from the driving maul. One was a sin bin of Geldenhuis at the new year number 7, was sin bin for dragging it down, and then obviously scored from a driving maul try. They scored from the resultant line out from the yellow card after about 10, 12, 14 phases. So excellent. Cameron Hutchison was man of the match. I thought he defended really, really well, and he was a kind of thorn in the Bulls' side in terms of some of his line breaks. I thought Struan Sesford, the big tight head, did well. Heriots back row, with Ian Wilson and Jack McLean, were good. I liked the Ayrshire Bulls hooker. He was tough, competitive, combative hooker who was in a kind of beaten team, but he's one I'd like to keep my eye on. And I thought the bench made a difference for the Ayrshire Bulls. I thought Russ Thompson came on and David Armstrong at 9 and 10 and made a decent impact. But as I say, it's week one, game one of the season. But there's certainly a competitive edge there, and there's a lot to improve on.
You mentioned it's week one, Chris, and you know, there was high tempo games at the weekend, a lot of fast paced rugby, high intensity. You know, from your playing experience, how hard is it to maintain that throughout a whole season?
How hard is it? I think that it depends what style of play you're set up to play. It depends what strength you have in your team and your team selection and the kind of ethos of your team. But I think you should always aim to do it. I think especially now where the periodization that happens in training, I think you can almost try and play that. Your training will have to be manipulated a wee bit or manufactured a little bit to allow you to play like that. But I think for certainly in the Super Six, I think it'd be possible to play at that high tempo because you're not playing a view. The first year in professional rugby, I came out second division rugby in Gala, played for Scotland in a tour, then played in a World Cup as a 21-year-old, and I think I played 42 games of professional rugby, and it was a lot. It's a lot more than you probably do now in your first season, your open season. And I like to think that I was able to play it in high intensity for the whole time. Training was less intense, and some of the games were less intense than they are now. But yeah, I think if you've got the right mindset and it suits your team, I think it's really important to have the discipline and the belief that you can play at a high tempo for as long as it takes.
So, Mossy, we've reflected on round one, but looking ahead to round two, there's some big games. Ayrshire Bulls are at home to the Burnhamuir Bears, Stirling County at home to Southern Knights, and then our featured game on the Sunday, which we're covering live, will be Heriots Rugby against Watts Onions this weekend. Those are the fixtures. What do you make of those fixtures, and who do you think will come out on top at the weekend?
Well, it'll be interesting to see again like how the team selections vary or if they stay the same. Obviously, the big thing for the Ayrshire Bulls is they've got two home games in a row and they'll look to bounce back. Peter Machie was frustrated when he spoke to him after the game, but there's no need to get overly frustrated with the mistakes. There's things that are definitely be able to put right. I think the Southern Knights will want to get their campaign up and running their way to Stirling. Obviously did really well to come back from being behind it at Burnhamuir, but quite a lot of experience in the Stirling side, so you'd imagine they would be looking forward to getting their home campaign up and running and use that experience. And the Edinburgh Derby, it'll be a cracker on Sunday, won't it? Heriots Watsonians. On paper, before week one, I thought Watsonians looked really quite strong. Obviously won their first game, a tough battle down in the borders, but maybe it's just because it was the only game I saw first hand. I thought the balance that Heriots had with the kind of DNA that they like to play wide, but also the structure from their set piece was excellent. So Heriots get the opportunity to go home. I think from week one, Heriot's were probably the top team.
Heriot's Rugby have their first home game in the Fosrock Super 6 this weekend, and we caught up with Neil Meikle, Director of Rugby.
My name's Neil Meikle. I'm Director of Rugby at Heriot's Rugby Club, and I've been Director of Rugby now for on and off for about 10 years. I had a hiatus in Hong Kong. I moved over there with my wife for a couple of years and I came back 2 or 3 years ago. My role here is obviously coordinating the off-pitch side of the rugby and making sure that we have everything in place for the teams, recruitment, coaches, and making sure that things operate smoothly, which they do hopefully most of the time.
Did you come from a rugby playing background yourself? Did you play the game when you were younger? Or?
Yeah, so my dad used to play for GHK and then I picked up the game when I was pretty young. It was actually from Ayr originally, which is, so the Ayr game's always a big one for me personally. And then I played for Ayr up until I was about 23 and then moved through to Edinburgh for work and then played for Heriot's. And then, yeah, I've been here ever since. There's a fair bit of pressure comes from playing for Heriot's and being at Heriot's. We've got a pretty proud history and produced some pretty incredible rugby players over the years. Andy Irvin, the Bear, who is still here, who phones me at least twice a week to work out what's going on. And if he doesn't like it, he's not shy in telling me. So there's a lot of history, and I think we always make a big point with the guys that when you're pulling on the jersey for Heriot's, it's a big thing and shouldn't be taken lightly. And that's, you know, whether you're playing for the first 15, the second 15, the Super 6, it doesn't matter. You're taking on the jersey and the history of the club.
How excited are you to be involved in the tournament?
I think the most important thing is the players' excitement behind it. And if you look at the levels that we've been achieving in training, we've had a couple of warm-up games against Newcastle. The team has moved to a completely new level, which is why Super 6 was implemented. We've seen a number of things come in terms of improvements in our strength and conditioning, our off-pitch. The quality of player that we have in the squad is above where we were last season. And so it's a really exciting time, and the guys just really cannot wait to get going. I mean, I like to think we were one of the first clubs to actually get on board with Super 6 as a concept, and the reason for that is that we saw it as an extension and building from the work that we'd done over the last decade and taking the team and the players, most important thing is the players, and getting them to play at a new level. So it wasn't really much of a decision for us to make. We felt that the concept works, and I think you'll see evidence that the team's playing at a new, higher level come this opening game against Ayr.
Obviously the ambition is to win it. Do you think that you've got the squad that's capable of doing so?
Yeah, I think, look, we aim to be competitive in everything we enter into. So we're going to push hard and see how it goes. You really are in the unknown because a lot of teams have changed significantly. We've retained the core of the squad that we had last year. We like to think we've enhanced that, but it really is very difficult to tell.
For more information on the Fosrock Super 6, just visit scottishrugby.org. And don't forget, this weekend's game on Sunday, if you're under 18, you get to go along for free. Moving over to the Guinness Pro 14, Moss, it was two good wins for Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Yeah, a home win for Edinburgh, 20 points to 7 here against the Dragons at BT Murrayfield. It was a good win, but a frustrating one, I think, for Richard Cockerell and some of the players. The Dragons defended really well, but it was clear they came to defend. They did the dug in, but I'd never ever felt that Edinburgh were going to lose the game, and I think that kind of feeling was on the field almost as well, and partly in the Dragons' mindset was, you know, let's dig in and let's stay in the game without really attacking mindset. So the intensity dropped out a little bit, but a couple of good tries. Blair Kinghorn scoring early on with a nice finish after some good work, and Duhan van der Merwe scores again, and that left corner scores all the time. And it was a good performance from Edinburgh, but one, I think, after the expectation set with a 50-point win against Scarlets 2 weeks ago, I think we're a little bit frustrated. But to take two wins, a 5-point and a 4-point win for most two games was an excellent return, and we'll be happy with the victory. Obviously they go away to Agen this weekend on the European Rugby Challenge Cup, so back to Europe. Agen, they're 13th in the top 14, so they're trailing a little bit. How they'll approach the Challenge Cup will be interesting. They've played 9 games so far in the top 14, they're sitting 13th, and it's another opportunity for Edinburgh, and Richard Cockerell alluded to this on Friday night, said to mix the squad up a little bit, play some younger players, play some more experienced players, maybe some returning from Rugby World Cup. Whatever it takes, I feel they'll be strong and they'll be going to pick up a win away from home in Europe, which hopefully they can do. And Glasgow won on the road. They won at Zebra, 31-7. A really heavy pitch. I think we spoke about it last week in preview, saying when you asked how difficult it is to play there. One of the things we spoke about was the pitch. It wasn't overly wet as in terms of water landing surface, but it was really, really heavy going. And the players did well to keep their accuracy, get the bonus point try. George Horn won another two tries. Adam Hastings, Ratu Tagivi, and Nick Frisby. So sharing the try, scoring around a little bit. Good discipline in difficult conditions. Don't forget that Leinster just won 3-0 out there a couple of weeks before in Zebra's last home game. So it can be a difficult place to go, but Dave Rennie and the guys were delighted with the accuracy. And they play Sale at home in the Champions Cup on Saturday.
What will Sale bring? I know there'll be a different feel to, because it's from a different league, but I don't think any South African players are going to feature for Sale, but what do you expect from them?
Yeah, well, none of the South African World Cup players, I don't think. They just still have two or three South Africans, Dupreez in the back row, the 10, Papier, the 9, is a Springbok as well, so they've got they will have that kind of physical influence, and that's probably what they are. They're a big, strong, physical side. They beat Wasps pretty well at the weekend. They've played four games in the Gaelic Premiership. They're sitting fourth with a lot of players to come back. I think usually for all the years I was ever involved, and probably since I've not been involved, English teams will try and just battle Scottish teams in the first weekend in Europe. I don't think they'll play a risky game. I think they'll play a tight game. And their mindset will be that they're coming to try and dominate up front, and I think Glasgow and Edinburgh are well prepared for that now. It's obviously Glasgow at home, and they'll know that's coming, but I think there's some opportunities there against Sale, who won't be used to playing as quickly as the teams in the against Pro 14 playing.
Just picking up on that point about English teams playing in Scotland, when you went down to Gloucester for your time there, did you play against Scottish teams in Europe or in competition? Did you have to come back up and play?
Good question. No, we played in France, played Ulster, I think.
Ulster.
And a couple of the other, what would have been then, Pro 12 teams and it's a different mindset. It's not the players can't do it, they're just not used to playing, say from turnovers or from penalty advantage. It's always quite controlled because it is low risk. Not completely and utterly low risk, but the general feeling is it's a bit low risk in terms of looking after possession in the Premiership. And whereas if you're not aware of how quickly like Celtic League teams or Pro 12 or Pro 14 teams play, it can catch you out a little bit. Similarly, when you play the French teams, they tend to defend differently. They tend to put more players in the backfield. They're less aggressive in the line speed, so you actually have quite a lot of time usually to play a bit more against the French teams. All have strengths and weaknesses in different areas, but it's a brilliant time as a player because you have to re-evaluate and you have to reset what you're about in this week. You're going from one competition to another. I like the fact that the both teams in their European competitions aren't playing Guinness Pro 14 teams, if that makes sense, It is something different. It is another challenge. It is a bit of uncertainty about who you're going, who you're playing against. There's not that familiarity, and it means you have to refocus and perform again.
We are delighted now to be joined by Scotland stars Chloe Rowley and Lisa Thompson, who are named this week in the Scotland squad ahead of the Autumn Test campaign, which kicks off this weekend at Scotstoun. I thought what we'd do is we'd just go back a little bit and understand kind of your guys' story. Now, you guys have known each other a long time. Talk us through when you guys maybe first met or were first aware of each other.
I think first aware of each other when we played at Melrose when I was like 16, 17. And then we became better pals when I joined the senior setup when I was 18. Yeah.
Was that at Melrose as well? The senior setup at Melrose as well?
No, the senior Scotland stuff.
Oh, senior Scotland stuff.
We became better pals then, aye.
So you're from Hoyk,
yep.
And Jed for you. So you, yep. You weren't aware of each other growing up in the borders, you weren't aware of each other before then?
I knew of Lisa, I just had never met her face to face, but then obviously, like she said, she came to Melrose and kind of that was it, and played a couple of games together there, and then I went away travelling. But it was more when I came back, and you know, I went into the senior setup with Scotland, and then Lisa came along to a Spain camp we had for 10 days, and that was pretty much it from there. Like, you know, became really good pals from there.
So growing up, obviously you weren't away each other till maybe later on in your lives, but what was your first involvement or memory of being involved with rugby?
First involvement was when I was like 5 at the Robbie Dyes down at Mansfield Park. Just a little kid in Oik, get chucked in. loved it ever since, really. Yeah, just running about. I remember having like a t-shirt on that was so itchy, and I hated having it on the whole time at the training session, but I enjoyed playing rugby, so.
At five.
And what you said, was it Robbie Dyes?
The Robbie Dyes way.
Right, because I need to ask you this, a Hoik thing, because I know that Hoggy sometimes uses that as a hashtag. Or what is that? Is that a person? What is that?
I honestly barely can. I think it's just a Hoik thing, I think. I think it's more reference to the boys, I think.
Is it?
But it was just that's what the like group was called, that Rocky Johnston had.
Was it Rocky's Johnston?
Aye.
Rocky's great. Was he the deal at that point? He's been involved. He's coached the club.
Still,
he's been brilliant for well, just not just the kind of youngsters coming through Hoik, but senior players. And remember, was it Hoggy got an award? Was it last season or the season before?
Where the coaches.
And everyone who or a handpicked selection of coaches that had helped him develop. And Rocky Johnson was one of them.
Right.
So he's,
Now, is his name actually Rocky, or has he chosen that as a nickname?
No, he's John Johnson.
Right, so he's chosen his nickname Rocky, that's...
Definitely, handpicked.
And Chloe, what was your first memory of rugby?
Mine was just when I was younger, going along and watching my brother play at Jadbury Mini Rugby, and that was it, like, for me. From there, I just went along and, you know, played in a few tournaments, done a few training sessions, and that was it, I think, you know, I grew up with 3 big brothers, and I think the whole contact side of things and everything like that, that's what... got me into rugby, but like that was it. My earliest memory maybe was when we went to Ayr to play in a mini rugby tournament. You know, me, a couple other girls, and all the boys just running around.
So when you were starting off in your rugby journeys, maybe it was 5 or a little bit later on. You know, at what point did you maybe think, you know, there's an avenue here for me that I'm going to keep pushing and want to play for Scotland? When did that kind of set in?
I think. Probably through high school, I started to be involved with, I think it was like under 15s at the time, the pathway stuff. There wasn't many games, but there was training camps throughout the year. So I think just being able to see that you could play for Scotland one day, I think when I was about 13, 14 maybe, thought I want to like give this a go. So I think, just from kind of high school age, really.
Yeah, similar for you, Chloe?
No, mine was a lot later on, obviously. You know, I'd played rugby since 8 and kind of went up through mini rugby, and I'd done a lot of other sports as well, so from a young age I wasn't always just focused on rugby. I think it wasn't until later on, you know, kind of joined Melrose, played for a bit there, went travelling, and it was after I came back from travelling I got like into the senior squad, and I think it was from there I actually realised like, oh, I could be playing for Scotland. Like, I knew people that had done it, like Lana Skeldon played before, and yeah, I knew like there was that chance there, but I never really thought about it much until I was in the situation.
Yeah, and I think you talked about it before at length, but you were kind of transitioning between rugby and football. I think, did you have some experience with Hearts as well? Is that
I played for Hearts Ladies when I was maybe 16 for a few seasons, and then it was all just like a little bit too much of, like, you know, you'd play on a Saturday for the football and then play Sunday with the rugby, and I think it was just time to decide, you know, take a path, and I thought to myself that I'd get a bit further in rugby than I would in football, and that's why, you know, I kind of chose rugby over football.
Yeah, was it a hard decision for you? Sorry, Moss, was it?
No, I was just saying that's really important. Like, I think a message for everybody that, like, you see, hear so many sports and so many, especially as sport becomes more and more professional, that you have to kind of choose early or make a decision or focus on this. I think, you know, that's kind of going back to me being a PE teacher. Well, not being preparing to be a PE teacher, but never actually doing it. It's so important. Like, the number of players that I've played alongside, and you guys will be the same, that hadn't only really taken up the sport fairly recently. It's so important to have an awareness, and yet, especially in your team, where spatial awareness of football players or hand-eye coordination from, you know, racket sports, it's so important for young players to do that. And there's a pressure on them not to. And I think it's something we have to champion, that you play loads of different sports, you learn in different ways, everybody progresses at different speeds, but it's good to know that kind of it's part of your development, and hopefully it can be part of others.
Lisa, did you play any other sports, or were you football or anything else?
I played football as well.
What position were you?
Centre-back or centre-mid.
Nice. Chloe, what were you?
I was a right-mid or centre-mid.
All right. Who's top goal scorer then between the both of you?
Oh, Chloe. I just pass the ball and let other folk run about.
Just boot it up the pitch.
Have you ever played a game of football? Like obviously played, but in a position.
Yeah, but I think so.
Any game of football I ever played, I just run about. Like I've never actually.
Oh well, no, and actually, no.
Like, have you actually been like given a position you have to stick to it?
I think in theory, yeah, but you always had to end up offside. You know, if I'm goalkeeper on defending, I'm always just trying to score a goal. Yeah, but that's a good point though, because when you're playing football, sorry to go off tangent here, but you're right. Maybe it's maybe a free form game just to let you run around and kick the ball, but. Sorry, I digress. No, I've never. I was terrible at football.
I was talking about it to somebody before and playing football. On that point I just made about playing loads of different sports.
Yeah.
And John Med, maybe I had been in a game where I was meant to be in a position, I just didn't.
No, I
find it hard to like stay in that position.
Yeah.
I would just drift upfield.
I remember I got the netball as well at college. You had to do two different netball things. In netball, you're strictly in your position. Hated it.
Yeah.
Hated it. Running left, right, and centre, getting absolutely no idea, no one of the ball. And subbed pretty quickly.
So when you guys, for example, are playing rugby, you know, you've all played, you've got your positions, but you've had to adapt, you've had to play in different positions as well. How's that hard? How's that for a mindset when you've maybe played a game at 13 or 12 for so long, and then you're moving to another position? How hard is that for you guys to consider it and make sure you put in a good performance?
I think it is hard, but I think you just need to get your head around like any eventuality can happen, and anybody could get injured at one point in the game. So. I think we've all got the moves like written down, run through, and you just need to make sure you're running through them at any position, really.
Yeah. Same for you, Chloe?
Yeah, obviously I've not moved much from fullback. My first cap was at 13.
Yeah.
But, you know, then it was kind of a free-for-all, you know, it was just like kind of play rugby, that was it. But now it's a lot more structured. But I think, yeah, like Lisa said, you know, you just need to get on with it. Like if you're put in that position, you know, you can't complain. You move on with it and, you know, you do your best you can do. Like that's all you can do.
So you mentioned earlier on about your first memory of rugby. You're from the borders, you know, Hoyke and Jed, a real rugby heartland. Who were your idols growing up? Who inspired you, or who did you look at and look up to?
I think for me, mine was Chris.
Was it?
Yeah. Yay. No, it was like
you set that up.
I did not.
No, yeah. Definitely, just being fullback and just the way he played and stuff. Like you know, with his kicking and like just his speed, the overall player. Like yeah, definitely for me was Chris.
Yeah. Lisa, did I inspire you?
Yeah, it was definitely Jamie. I think it was just like that sort of era, like Brian O'Driscoll, definitely watching him play. I'd like love to be sort of similar the way he plays the game. Obviously watching Dan Carter growing up as just an amazing player, like such a knowledgeable guy. So just love sort of watching that sort of lot play rugby.
And what's great now about the women's game is, you know, the professional level of it as well. But, you know, people are idolising Chloe and Lisa. How does that make you feel knowing that you are inspiring a young generation in women's rugby?
I think it's crazy, really. Like, I was saying to my mum the other day, like, I still feel like a kid. Like, when I go in the schools, like, coaching sometimes, like, still feel like a child as well. So it's crazy to think that, like, kids are looking up to us to want to be us and do what we're doing. I think it's inspiring, and it feels
so good. Surreal, like, isn't it? It's like you don't think it would happen, and then it's happening. You know, sometimes you go somewhere and, you know, a mum will come up to you and ask you, oh, my daughter wants a picture, she knows you, she's seen you on the TV. Like, it's such an amazing feeling to have, and, you know, we just need to focus on staying the best we can be to keep inspiring those younger girls to come up and play rugby and hopefully one day, like, take our place.
Do you find that as a pressure, an added pressure?
Nah, no, really.
Just an inspiration.
Just an inspiration.
No, it's because some people really struggle with that. Like just feeling that you can't be yourself because you have to live up to what somebody else wants you to be. But it's brilliant that you can just still go out and deliver and inspire this. But you've probably seen that with the reaction of the Scotland crowd last year. We're making Scotland home as well. And the kind of pre-match and half-time games that are there with so many girls that are playing, they will be looking up to you. So long may it continue. Don't feel it as a pressure.
No.
And you mentioned Scotland there. The move to Scotland for you guys has been really good. The crowds have been great. How much have you enjoyed playing and having a home base?
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have somewhere, you know, to call home. Like, you know, like every game you're going to be there, and it's, you know, we've got the same setup and stuff like that. But Yeah, I think to have that crowd there as well, and you know, for it to be in Glasgow, in a city where people can make it, and I think it's huge for us. It really helps us as a team, the atmosphere, you know, the fact that we've got people cheering us on, like, you know, just to keep us going.
Yeah, I think we're all really excited to get there this weekend as well. Mm-hmm. Like, being away in South Africa, long 10 days out there, and last game of Six Nations was away, and it's been a while since we've been back at Scotstoun, so we're all excited to get there, and the atmosphere is unreal there, so we're excited.
And how was South Africa? It was great results for you out there, but just as a trip, as a squad to bond, I guess you got a lot out of that as well.
It was massive. Just like 10 days together was huge for us, especially get to know Goose and new coaching staff and stuff all together, being immersed, like, you've no choice but to get on with each other. Mm. You're sleeping in the same place like for 10 days, so it was good to get to know each other better.
Had you been to South Africa before? Was that your first time there?
It was our first tour as a squad as well, like, you know, to go over there was amazing, and you know, we didn't forget that. It was a great opportunity to have as a team, like Lisa says, to develop and, you know, learn all our new plays with a new coach and stuff like that.
Two big wins as well.
Yeah,
first
good
test,
wins.
47-5 and second test 38-15. Was there a kind of fear of the unknown of being the first tour in the Southern Hemisphere as well? Was there a kind of trepidation really at what you're going to face, or was it just like so positive and so kind of driven with what you guys can do and how you can perform that you got those big wins?
I think it was a bit of both, really. I think we didn't know what was going to happen, but we were also so excited to get on the pitch. We had done training camps, like, you know, way before, and you know, all the training we had done was building up to this tour. I think definitely was, you know, we were a bit, oh, what's going to happen, but also like, let's get out there and let's show everyone what we've got, kind of thing.
And it's Wales this weekend, isn't it?
Yep.
You had a few tough ones, or a few close ones of them over the last couple of years, so it'll be more of the same, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's going to be close, but like, I think we're definitely, we are focused on us and what we can do, and you know, how we can build up to the Six Nations, and you know, even for this time next year as well for the qualifiers, but definitely just to focus on us, and you know, we just need to think about us, and what happens, but as long as we improve as a squad again.
And we can use that experience for South Africa as well, because it was fairly recent, wasn't it, last month?
Yeah,
so that kind of is a great head start. But Wales have played a couple of games recently as well. They played Ireland last
Spain
weekend.
And
Spain and Ireland. Spain are pretty strong, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So they're battle hardened as well. So it should be a cracker on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's traditionally quite close with Wales. You know, I think they only made a couple of points in it. And I think a couple of years ago you got that great win against Wales.
We're really excited for it. Like you say, we've been out to South Africa and stuff, but like, to be home, it feels more like an autumn test series this weekend. I'm just excited to get going, really, to have two games back to back, and especially against Japan, something completely new to play against. Just excited to get going, really.
Yeah.
And have you not played against Japan before?
Just at Sevens.
And what do they expect? Do they base their game similar to the men's game in terms of the tempo and the speed that they bring? Or?
Yeah,
they were very fast. Yeah, the Sevens were, you know, it was always on the go. Like, you know, you never had a second to take a breath and reset. It was just constantly, you know, in our faces and stuff. And I expect like the 15s will be the same, and they'll probably be very physical as well.
That'd be good.
And these are your first games under the new head coach, Philip Doyle, or Goose, as you call him. Is it Mr. Goose when you're being you're asking for something, or is it just Goose? What's it been like having him being brought into the setup? What's been some of the takeaways so far?
I think it's just, you know, the fact that what he says goes, kind of thing. You know, he's just brought a lot more like clarity to the game, and you know, as an individual, like personally, I know what I'm supposed to be doing and when I'm supposed to be doing it, and I'm sure the other girls as well are the same, which is, you know, making that difference as an overall squad to, you know, bring the performances.
You agree with that, Lisa?
I think he's just sort of freshened us up a wee bit, and we're all excited to play rugby again. I think we're just going to get stuck a wee bit going through the motions the past 4 or 5 years, but everybody's excited to play, and everybody's like fighting for their position. There's a lot more competition in every place, so we're really, really excited just to get playing.
And Brian Easton was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know Brian really well. He's an attack-minded coach, isn't he? He'll have your skills on point, and you'll enjoy the kind of strategy that he sets a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's good. He's brought a lot of attacking plays like to suit us as a team. you know, with her pace and, you know, Lisa running her lines and Hannah Smith and stuff like that. Like, he's definitely brought in things that can, you know, help us on that side of things.
Good.
This is a big year as well. This is all building towards, you've got the autumn tests, you've got the Six Nations, but the 2021 qualification for the World Cup. Now, being able to watch the World Cup that just passed there must give you the excitement that you guys could be part of something like that. How much does that spur you on over the next year or so to try and get to a World Cup?
Like, so much.
Yeah.
Like, watching that, thinking we can be part of something like that is crazy, and especially the Women's World Cup a couple of years ago is, like, we just want to be part of that, and, like, we're looking to peak next September, essentially, to qualify for the World Cup the following year. So, everything's going towards that, really.
2021 is New Zealand, isn't it? The World Cup.
Yep.
Have you played it before?
Never played.
When you travelled, where did you go when you travelled? You said earlier on.
I was in Australia.
In Australia.
Yeah.
And did you play over there?
No, I went at the wrong time to play.
It's never a wrong time to go to Australia, is it?
I just want to go back to when you guys were growing up, and you talked about it a little bit, and you said you went between football and rugby, you weren't sure, you made a decision, and Lisa, you came to it when you went to Melrose. Yep. You guys are now, you played in France, there's a professional element to this game. What's been it like for you guys to be able to play in France and also for professional teams?
I think it allows you to, like, realise what can happen when you put, like, the hard work in and stuff. Like, going through school, playing rugby, football, hockey, all these different sports, trying to study at the same time, you're thinking, can I just catch a break here? So I think putting all that hard work in and being out in France and essentially being a professional rugby player out there, it was really good, and it was just a nice feeling to be able to recover and chill out a bit when you're playing rugby at the same time.
And how was your French? Did you learn any?
Our French is great.
Not happening, no?
Yeah, I think we can speak fluent French.
Yeah. Chloe, you were laughing there when I said the French.
Yeah, I think we could probably do it to each other, but I don't think anyone else would want to hear it.
Good answer.
It's a secret language.
Good answer.
What was it like, though, for you, Chloe, like, being out there and being the culture? I think you've talked about, I remember reading an article, you were saying that you went to a game and there was a huge crowd, there was a brass band, and you were playing in the back pitches and you couldn't get your head around the demand or the excitement around that game. That must have been a total change for you.
Yeah, I think, like, for me personally, Lisa was there as well at that day that, you know, we were on the back pitches in Lille, and as you said, like, the brass band and all the flags and the banners and stuff like that, like, it's massive. Like, it, you know, it changes your life in a way you didn't think it would. Like, you know, you get all the life experience, you know, it improves you as a player and as a individual outside of rugby. Like, you know, you have to put yourself in positions that you didn't think you'd have to, you know, get through. And I'm sure Lisa will agree, like, the life over there is very different, and, you know, to be able to go to a shop and ask for what you want, it was difficult, but you just kind of got on with it as well. But yeah, like I said, I think it is just definitely, like, an overall life experience that, you know, I'll take away and I'll use each different skill that I learn, and, you know, hopefully keep improving in life experiences.
You mentioned life experience, and I might be wrong here, but I think you went travelling at one point as well, but away from rugby, you went travelling and you came back because you missed your family. You missed your family a lot.
Yeah.
How was that transition to France for you then, off the pitch? Was it hard moving away from the comfort of home and going alone in France?
Yeah, definitely. No, it's never easy to move away from your family, no matter where you are, you know, a couple hours away or whatever else like that, but it was definitely hard, and there was times, I'm sure Lisa will agree on this as well, where, you know, you were sitting there and for a second you thought, like, what am I doing? Like, you know, miss my family, miss my friends, you know, you want your home comforts back. But again, you do just get on with it. You do just, you know, it's for the best what you're doing, and you need to believe that at the time, because then later on it'll pay off, which it has, like, for both of us. You know, we've been able to come back over here and play our rugby over here because of what we've done before.
Yeah, and that's, like, Moss, you've played away from home as well.
Listen, there's times that, like, that's really powerful and positive as well, Chloe, because there's times where you're at home and you feel that, and there'll be a lot of players, young players, even old players, maybe even international experienced players, probably feel that but don't want to say it. Like, there is time to think, what am I doing? Like, you know, like, you're making so many sacrifices, it's so hard, you're maybe not getting the performance or the wins you want, you're feeling the criticism, you're feeling the heat. But having those experiences behind you make it all worthwhile. And the next time you turn around and you're struggling, your teammate says, come on, you're right.
Yeah.
It makes a massive difference. So, like, whenever you feel as if you're like that. It's such a brilliant sport to have your teammates around about you, and be that. And you could be at home thinking the same thing, or you could be away, or you could be the other side of the world, but it's definitely moments like that, more than probably people think. And it's like, that's the beauty of having gotten through that. You know, the next time you're feeling a bit, look, I can do this, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the same as performance and results as well. But one thing I was going to ask on the women's game, who's the hardest, not the opponent, but teams wise, when you play, say, the Six Nations, is it England? Are they still setting the benchmark in terms of the hardest opponents?
Probably in terms of like being drilled in their game plan. But when you play France, you just, they're physical, and it's the same as the guys. Like, you never really know what you're going to get.
Like, do you prefer to play against that though? Because sometimes it gives you a better opportunity. Because it can be more erratic, and you know, for the kind of the physical elements of it. But they do force mistakes as well. I used to love playing against the French team because it does give you a way.
Yeah, get in their head, definitely. Yeah. Like, you can wear them down, like, you know. But you just need to keep on top of wearing them down, like, you know. You just need to keep making them make mistakes, and it's, you know, easier said than done. But I think to play England and to play France, like, you know, it's a good lesson to learn, you know. Even though it's hard, it's a hard game to take, you know, at the end of the result at the end and whatever. But I think it is definitely, you hear the whole thing of, oh, but we'll take our lessons from it and we'll learn. That's what happens. You leave and you think, oh, we could have done this or we could have done that, and you know, your next sessions are focusing on what you didn't do and, you know, what you need to do right next time.
Yeah, and I think just playing in France definitely helped us play against France. With those players, we realised there are no superhumans.
They're just normal like we are, and they play rugby like we do.
And that was going to be my next question. You both play in England as well. So taking that kind of unfamiliarity or making it more familiar, it makes a massive difference, doesn't it? Knowing that you can compete, you can show them up at training yourselves. And I suppose a big thing for you is to impart that knowledge in the rest of the squad.
Definitely. I think we'd done that when we were in France. Like, the result we had against France when we came back, that Six Nations, I think showed that. And I think being in England is the same. Like, you see all their mistakes at training, but in a game you do see their mistakes. That's when it counts, so they're on point. But yeah, in training you see the mistakes, and you know their faults and you know their weaknesses. So
that's the other thing, you know their weaknesses.
I've got a question as well. If you could give some advice to young girls looking to pick up a rugby ball, something that you wish somebody had told you, what would it be?
I think mine is, like, you know, just go for it. Like, you know, me and Lisa both played alongside boys when we were younger. You know, that's not something to be afraid of. You know, you're probably in a better position then. You know, you grow up and you go through experiences of being alongside boys where, you know, it's a bit tougher even at that young age. But no, definitely, like, just, you know, if you're thinking about playing rugby, just go for it. Like, don't even give it a second thought. You know, you make so many friends that you can someday call family as well. Like, it's that kind of close knit environment, and you know, you've always got someone there to help you.
Yeah, I think just the same. And like, when you're a girl playing amongst the boys, like, just remember that it'll pay off one day. And like, it's definitely done us wonders playing with the boys when we were younger. And I think just stick in, like, they'll know pass the ball at you for the first couple of weeks, but then they'll realise that you can catch it and you can run through them. And like, just stick in, because yeah, it will pay off.
I can vouch for that. I've been coaching these guys when they've been involved with the Borders Academy way back when, and it's so true. And just the opportunity when you do get the ball, you do show them up, the look in the face is brilliant.
Did you play with Darcy for a bit back in
the day? We were the same age. I think we played against each other, like, primary school. Yeah. Right.
Now, that's really good advice, guys, and we really appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
Training now,
yeah. Off to the gym as well. But more importantly, best of luck this weekend in your autumn test campaign, and we'll get you back onto the podcast soon.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Thank you.
Two really inspiring young women there, Mossy and Lisa Thompson and Chloe. It was just great to actually get them in this environment and to hear from them about their rugby journey, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's brilliant, wasn't it? It's so open, so kind of excited really about being involved in rugby and just not having the barrier of, you know, anything really. As a young girl growing up, happy to pick up the ball, get mucked in, go play along with the boys, and it's brilliant to know that all that, they feel as if all that's helped them get to where they are now. And they really are two stars. I mean, for anyone who's not seen them playing, Chloe's electric as a fullback, so it's wonder tries. She's a proper, you know, dangerous threat with ball in hand, and Lisa's not that far away from what Brian O'Driscoll used to do and how she plays either. She can play across the midfield, she can play in the back three, but really powerful, quick, good over ball, good kicking game. So that in terms of being role models and inspiring either girls or women, that they do it on the field immaculately as well as off the field.
Well, if you want to go along and see them play, they kick off against Wales this Sunday at Scotstoun, a 3:10 kickoff, and then the following week they will be facing Japan, also at Scotstoun on the 24th of November, a 1 p.m. kickoff. For more information on those fixtures and anything else around Scotland Women, just visit scottishrugby.org. Thank you once again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.